Hello, everybody. It's time for our chill Friday night Q&A hangout. If you would like to grow as an artist and you can't afford an art class, we've got everything you need here at Art Prof. Critiques, tutorials, professional development, and workshops. Pop into the chat your questions that you would like to ask me about anything art related while I show off my skeleton in the background. Thanks to a lovely donor, I have now the skeleton, and I do need to do some anatomy lessons so that way you guys can learn about phalanges, which are the bones in the fingers. And so those anatomy lessons will be coming very soon because I have been dying to revamp my anatomy series. So tell me what's been going on this week. I was very happy because I finally found some time to edit a video. Oh gosh, I think it's been sitting around for 2 years now, but it is an interview with my former RISD professor, Andrew Raftery, and he finished recently a series of astonishing watercolor paintings that no human being should be able to do. It's just, oh my gosh. And he talks to me about his watercolor technique, but also his method for conceiving of the paintings. It's a very long tutorial. It's about an hour, and I will cut it up into little pieces for people to watch. But I am very excited to share that tutorial with all of you. We have a question from DeVerne, who says, what would you say to someone who is so overwhelmed by archivability that they just don't draw anymore? I remember that not everything you make needs to be archival. There are many contexts where the physical artwork sticking around for hundreds of years is actually not that important. For example, a lot of you know I've been trying to jumpstart this freelance illustration career, which happened, I don't know, 25 years after I got my degree in illustration. And in illustration, the final result is actually the printed illustration, the illustration in the magazine. And so in illustration, it's not really common to see the physical artworks displayed in galleries somewhere. And I think it's important to know that there are many artworks like that. I have a lot of artworks, I just do them to practice. For example, if I go to figure drawing and I just want to practice my figure drawing skills, maybe I use newsprint, which is not archival at all. But the end result is me getting experience. It's not about making a beautiful drawing that is going to stay on my wall and be there forever. And so I'd actually say the only times when you really have to have something be archival would be if you're going to sell something, or if you know that something is going into a private collection or a museum collection, anything like that. Absolutely, you will definitely need to have archival stuff because you can get in trouble. If something starts to yellow and somebody bought it 10 years ago, that's bad. But don't worry about archivability if you're just practicing or doing something for a context where you don't need the physical artwork. Yes, I know. Isn't this strange? That this is me keeping up with the times. So everybody, just so you know, there may be people popping up into this stream who have never seen us before, because the difference is that the vertical live streaming, our live video is going to show up in the shorts feed. The regular live streams don't show up in the shorts feed. So people don't choose to click on this. I just show up in their feed. It's something we're trying out. I think it's pretty okay. I don't think I've burned down the building just yet. But yeah, let me know what you think about this new format, because we're definitely playing around with things. Because things just always change. That's the only guarantee you can have in life, Manette says, tonight a friend helped me with some facial anatomy. Then I did some thumbnails to explain my potential plans to my sis. I had not planned on thumbnails, but they happened anyway. I call that the art prof influence because I'm so obsessed with thumbnails. But I will say though, I do know artists who don't use thumbnails. Song Kang, who is a brilliant pen and ink artist, some of you may have seen her tutorials here. She doesn't do thumbnails and her work is exquisite. The thing about thumbnails is I think you have to have the experience of it. You got to give it a shot. And I don't mean just draw a few. I mean, really learn the technique, because there's also certain projects that, oh, I really, really need thumbnails for this. I'm making this other piece. It's not as necessary. I would imagine if you are painting a 20-foot wide mural, you probably want to have thumbnails. If you're doing something a little bit more spontaneously, maybe the thumbnails don't matter. For me, it's all about gaining more in your tool set. You have more different ways to make that happen. Yes, and this is a great follow-up from 7A, who says, there is always the option to preserve your work in photos if you're worried about the stability of it. Then you can have an easy-to-store digital archive. Pretty much everything I made in art school, I have a few pieces buried somewhere in a portfolio, but most of it I don't have anymore. I recycled it or I gave it away or something like that, because at a certain point you just can't store the work anymore. It's totally impossible. So what I did when I got rid of a lot of that art school work is I archived all of it with photographs. And so now I have those digital photos of those pieces. And for me, that's totally enough. I mean, I don't have the storage space for all that artwork. There's just no chance. And so when you have a photo that at least is a record, as 7A says, that's incredibly helpful. Yes, I know, Ginger, we're all getting used to it. I hope it's okay. I like to be on the cutting edge. I like to see what's happening. So Izzy says, I tried to join Discord, but it didn't work. What you can do is if you go to our website, artprof.org, and you type Discord into the search bar, you will find the Discord page. Or if you go into the main menu bar and you click under Join the Art Prof Family, there is a link there that says Discord server. And we have instructions for exactly how to join. So you need to get a Discord account first, and then you need to join our server. The invite link is on that page. And we have other people in the chat right now who are in the Discord. So if anybody has tips for that, it really is just a matter, you just have to get into our server. And once you're there, we have a wonderful team of moderators who are happy to help you. I will be there. So you just have to get there and then you will have tons of help. And PM says, is it okay to start oil painting with the Zorn palette, or is that too subtle for a beginner? Sure, try it. If you're interested in something, go ahead. Because I just don't subscribe to this idea of you have to do this and you have to learn it really well before you can do this. And I just don't think art is like that. The only time I would say that is the case where it's like, yes, you must know how to do this first, is if you're doing something that has any structural demands. For example, I just cast this sculpture and yeah, you better know what you're doing before you start pouring rubber and stuff like that. Like that is not a technique I would ever tell a beginner to do. I give them something way more simple. But when it comes to painting, it's totally okay. And if you find that for you, it's too subtle, you can always do something else. There's going to be so many circumstances, and maybe you guys can tell me in the chat, when you've had those times where you've thought, oh, I'm going to do this, and you try it, it's like, oh, this really didn't work for me. And then you go do something else. It's really not a big deal. And you have to have those experiences as a beginner to find out what you don't like, because there's no correct way to paint. There's no correct palette. It's more about you being exposed to enough different types of techniques that you actually have a choice. You actually can say, oh, you know what? I don't like the Zorn palette, and here are the reasons why. Instead of just saying, oh, I'm not even going to try it. I mean, I haven't tried it. So maybe I'm being a little bit of a hypocrite, but a lot of people have told me they do enjoy it. I have my own system for now, but maybe someday I will. And Kathy says, I've been pondering an idea for a piece. And by the way, everybody, tell me what your projects are. What are you working on right now? I have way too many going on, but right now my project is editing that watercolor tutorial because I really want to share it to you guys. It's going to be one of the best videos we ever put out, which is why it took so long. And so Kathy says, I've been pondering an idea for a piece. I had the urge to sketch some thumbnails today at work, but I didn't have my sketchbook with me. Whoops. That's like having your camera, because I had this one time we hiked to this place in Utah and I was really tired. I'd just gotten back from a trip. I was like, oh, I don't want to bring my camera. And of course we get there and there's this spectacular mushroom that I was dying. I'm like, why? So never leave home without your camera or sketchbook. And actually I do have a really small sketchbook. It's like that big and it's in my purse. I carry it everywhere. And it's just a dumpster fire. It's basically, I'm at Joanne Fabric waiting in line. This is taking forever. I think I'll do a quick sketch of the person in front of me because I have nothing better to do. So yes, it's absolutely a good thing to do. And we also have Carolyn, who says, thinking about making an ocarina out of air dry clay, but I'm worried about moisture in my breath damaging it while playing it. Any suggestions on sealing the inside? I don't have a lot of experience with sealing air dry clay. I think the thing I would be concerned about is that whatever sealant you use, it has to be food safe. Because if you're going to put your mouth on it, that's pretty important. I mean, something I've used a lot to seal sculptures in the past has been shellac, but I don't think you want to put your mouth on shellac. So you might actually look into any sealant which is food safe. That's the first thing that you want to do, because air dry clay is porous and it is going to absorb things. So that's smart that you thought about that in advance. Lisa is asking, I've been doing drawing with wax pastels for a while. Any tips for switching to graphite? I'm having withdrawals. I miss the side of the pastel so badly. Have you thought, Lisa, about trying graphite powder? Because actually, oh wait, I have it. It's on my shelf. Hang on a second. I think it is. Let's see. Yes, I do. Some of you may have seen, I went to Kremer Pigment, which is this delicious art supply store, but they actually serve many industries. They're not just for artists. They also supply woodworkers and people who work in interior design. But anyway, when I was at Kremer, I bought some of their graphite powder and I'm very excited to try it because the only graphite powder I've tried in the past is the one that Generals makes and it just comes in a jar. But this one is black and look at this. This is graphite powder, but it's silver. And I've never used graphite powder that was a different color than the run-of-the-mill graphite. And Kat told me that one of her favorite ways, I think a professor taught her at RISD, was to take a foam brush and push the graphite powder across the surface. Or you can also get... Hang on a second. It's also here. Hang on. This is the other thing that you guys can try. And actually, I got this from Carolyn. I think you're live in the chat right now. But Lisa, you absolutely can use the side if you use a material like this. So this is art graph. And you can see that these are big graphite sticks. I've never used this brand before, which is why I wanted to give it a shot. But if you get graphite sticks like this and you use graphite powder, which by the way, graphite powder is so messy. So don't do it unless you're willing to make a mess and clean it up. But if you get stuff like this, you can totally get a similar type of experience. You have to make sure you get one that's soft enough. Of course, it depends on the person. I tend to like the softer, darker graphite sticks because there are some graphite sticks which are hard. And when you try to put marks down, it takes a lot of effort. I liked these because, well, I haven't tried them yet, but these appealed to me because they looked really soft. And there's actually, there's another material I really want to try, and it's called graphite putty. I don't know what that is, but it is on my wish list. And if you guys want to send it to me, just click on the link in the video description under Art Supply Reactions, because I'm very curious. I'm like, what is this graphite putty thing? So we'll have to see. And Mystical Ren has been doing impasto style acrylic paintings, working on getting good values. It's been challenging. Value is a tricky thing. I think you always have to remind yourself to hit those various parts of the grayscale. And I think it is helpful to think about, well, what is my tendency? So you may see some people, their tendency is to go too gray. Maybe they are a little afraid to put down the darks. Other people, like me, I put dark on everything. Like, that's my default way to fix things. I just say, oh, I don't like this, I'm going to make it dark. Before I know it, it's really, really dark. But if you know that about yourself, there's a way to keep yourself from falling into that. So I know I do that. And so I try to delay when I put in the dark darks, because I typically put them in way too soon. So if you think about what's your tendency, that can be very helpful. Ginger says, when one of my professors denied my drawings for an assignment, so now I got to come up with 3 more 18 by 24 drawings by Tuesday. This week has not been my week. Ugh. How do you deny drawings, though? Does that mean he thought you did them wrong? That's weird. Like, I've never done that to a student. The only time I bother a student is like, oh, you haven't done it. Yes, pass it in. But that's weird that he would deny your drawing. Depends on the professor, obviously. And Ellen Doy says, working on 2 projects for school, an ink drawing, acrylic self-portrait, acrylic landscape for an art exhibit. Let's not forget work stuff. I know. It's like, who has time to do all these things? So my indication that I am productive in my work is when the laundry just gets higher and higher, because it means I'm not doing laundry, I'm making work. But when I do laundry, it means I'm not making work. It's like, you got to pick one. It's like, well, do I want a clean house or do I want to work on my artistic projects? Who knows? Alexandria is laying down the base drawings for my first picture book. Oh, that's fantastic. I'm so excited. And by the way, Alexandria, if you don't follow Jarrett Krasowska online, you should. His handles are all Studio JJK. He was here on a live stream a little ways back. He's got a fantastic social media presence. He gives all kinds of pointers for children's books and publishing. He shows all the various stages. You should go follow him because he's got really fantastic information. He's also a super nice person. Ashley says, I am a grad painting student and I'm going to be a teaching fellow for an intro painting and an intro drawing class. Any tips? Always make sure you have a plan B. I'm serious, because sometimes you have this idea for doing something in class and you think, oh, it'll take up the whole class. But sometimes it doesn't. Like, sometimes if you don't have experience having done something before, you don't realize that certain things can't last for 3 hours, that type of thing. I mean, I taught classes at RISD that were 7.5 hours long, and I had to really make sure I was stocked up with things to do. So if you say to yourself, okay, well, today we're going to do this exercise, you should prep too and say, oh, if this exercise feels like it's sort of losing some energy and the students are not paying attention as much, I can always bring in this other exercise that they can do. So you have to have backup plans when you teach. And I think students really, really appreciate specificity with art supplies. I know that not everybody here has gone to art school, obviously, but who here has gone to art school and gotten that super vague supply list where they're like, printmaking paper? It's like, what kind? What size? What pound? The people at the Reese's store love me because I used to make supply lists and I would have pictures on them and I would put links. And so it was like super specific what to get. But I know a lot of the students just were so annoyed when professors didn't give it to them in advance. Like a lot of teachers would give you the supply list the first day of class, which I hated because you're basically trapped into buying supplies. So I always get the supply list to the students at least a week in advance, so they have a little bit of that time. And the other thing is you have to write your syllabus like it's the Constitution, because the syllabus is a way of being a record. It's like an agreement that you and the students make together that, okay, we're going to agree that these are the guidelines for the class. And so when there are some things that students will push back on, you can always point to the syllabus and say it's in the syllabus. And you go over it the first day of class. So I would just think about all those things, like how are you going to deal with attendance and tardiness and make sure you're consistent and that you have that from day one. Because the biggest problem is when you don't have things like that spelled out on your syllabus, the students can always say, well, you never told me that, I didn't know. But if it's in the syllabus, they can't argue with that. So write a good syllabus. That's very, very important. Jess says, I brought out my gouache and plan on playing around with values, hoping I can paint a few Patreon tutorials this weekend. Any thoughts on Skillshare, other platforms that are good for learning to paint? We actually did Skillshare ads a couple years ago. And one of the things that I got to do because we were doing ads is they give you access to their library for free. Because basically what we had to do to make the ad is we had to watch a class and then we'd have to make like a 1 minute ad that explained what we got from the class. And from my experience, and I'd love for other people to chime in, where other places you have learned to paint and what have been good resources for you, because of course I think we're fabulous, but we can't do everything. There's all kinds of other platforms that have great things to offer. I think the thing about Skillshare is it's very good because there's so much content. But I do think one of the drawbacks is there's no interaction. You basically watch. And I think from a learning point of view, that's pretty difficult because there's so much you can learn online. I mean, it blows my mind at the click of my finger, all the things that I can learn. But one of the drawbacks is learning like that, there's a limit to how far you can improve. At a certain point, after you've absorbed all this information and you've made all this stuff, you need the customized individual feedback, because the feedback is the part that people oftentimes don't get, which is why there are so many platforms that are like Skillshare, where it's like you pay to get access to these videos. But for me, that's only half of the learning experience. I mean, certainly absorbing that information, but the feedback to me is what really makes it happen. So you could probably do a lot of platforms like that to see other different ways of working. I would recommend going to James Gurney's channel. I think he's one of the best painters living today. He has a fantastic YouTube channel. I love his tutorials. He does a lot of painting on site. He paints from life and has brilliant painting techniques. So definitely check out his channel. He largely uses gouache, some casein. I think he does some watercolor, but he's fantastic. And we also have, okay, so Ellen Joyce says Domestika. I guess it depends a lot on the course you choose to follow. Well, that's the thing about these really big platforms like Skillshare, is it is sort of hit or miss because they're so big. I don't think they can have the same degree of quality control. I guess that's a trade-off, when you have thousands of classes, I mean, here I'm a total dictator. If it's not good enough, I'm like, no, we can't release that. And sometimes I'll have the staff work on things for a while, and I'm like, nope, it's not good enough. Goodbye. I mean, not to the staff, but to the content. I'll just be like, we can't use it. It's not to my standard. But I mean, that's just because this is a mom and pop shop. So Ginger's following up. She said, I didn't meet the requirements, but I thought I did. She didn't show us examples and said she was very open for the assignment, but apparently not. Oh, that's so frustrating. It's hard because I think oftentimes it's so hard to hit that sweet spot of giving students an assignment that is open-ended enough that the students really feel like they can bring their own voice to it. But you also can't be too vague, because when you're too vague and the students are sort of meandering because you've been vague, and then you get frustrated that, oh, they wandered too much. It's like, well, that's kind of your fault if you were too vague. And I've totally done that. I've been the instructor. Sometimes I would try out a new project and, oh, I could see it bomb right before my eyes. I could tell I was too vague. And I put that fault on myself. And it's hard to write a good prompt. I think it is something you have to have a lot of experience with. And I know even prompts that I've done in the past that I thought were, oh, that was a good prompt, I would always change it somehow. I would say, well, next time this could have been better. Or, you know what, this time I'm going to add in this thing and let's see how that changes the prompt. And so I really do think when I'm teaching, a prompt is almost like an organism. Like, it keeps evolving depending on who's doing the prompt. Like, I have a lot of prompts I used to teach at RISD and I'm doing them here at ArtProf, but I had to totally reformat them because it's not like at RISD where I'd be like, oh, go to the store and buy this, this, and this. I have to write the lessons here assuming that people don't have giant budgets, and I have to have options like substitutes. Like, if you don't have this, you can use this. This is okay. This is ideal, but this is also all right. And so for ArtProf, I really had to learn a whole other way of writing a prompt, so that way it would be more accessible to people of all ages, people of different budgets, and people of different generations. I mean, everybody uses social media so differently that I've had to think about that. Amara says, planning multiple crayon drawings using the Photoshop reference photos video you made. Love you guys so much. Crayon drawing will be bound in a book as a gift for my partner. Oh, I love that. Thank you so much for sharing that, Amaris. And a reminder, everybody, we do have spots available in these April workshops. We have drawing hands and feet. Color palettes is coming up for those of you who want to nerd out about color even more. I mean, I wish I had taken this workshop. And imaginary landscapes. Remember that these are all held in the Discord and they're super fun. They really are a great opportunity for you guys to get real-time feedback. Let's see what else people are asking. We also have May Hugh. Any advice for person thinking about learning digital art? I'm probably not the best person to ask that question. I wish Jordan was here to answer it, but I can tell you one thing that helped me and that also helped DeepD, which is that DeepD, we actually made a short a little while ago and she recommended in Procreate. And Procreate's great. It's very inexpensive. I think it's a $10 one-time thing. Adobe subscription's expensive. It's, can't remember, $50 a month or something. But for a lot of people, Procreate is a little bit better. And she recommended using the 6B brush. She said it is the brush that is the closest to a pencil. She said it was very versatile, because I know the mistake that I made when I started digital, well, I didn't start digital art, I just tried it. I don't really feel like I gave it much of a shot, but I was so overwhelmed by all of those brushes that I found it just impossible. And so in retrospect, I really wish that I had thought about just doing one. By the way, everybody, so you all know, I am working to delete some of the not so nice comments in there. And I did know that was going to happen because we are now in the shorts feed. This is a very different format than what we are used to. So apologies if we see some of that stuff coming up. I am doing the best I can to get rid of those comments. Thank you so much, Mystical Wren, for the super chat. We so much appreciate your support. And again, these super chats and super stickers, they add up. And it's so helpful to us. We're small enough that when I get a $5 donation, I'm still really excited. I know that's sort of pathetic, but it's true. I mean, for us, it's impactful. We really value your support. And actually, all of you are the reason that I am going to the Southern Graphics Conference, which is the biggest printmaking conference in the US. You guys made it happen for me because the conference fee is very high. I had to get a plane and pay for all those things. And the community really came through. I have to say thank you to everybody for making that happen. Okay, let's go back up and see what some of the other questions are. I'm gonna scroll through and keep coming into the chat and tell me, what is your current project? What are you working on right now? I have too many things. It's like I have my studio projects, but I also have my editing projects. It's just like a lot of stuff. Cypherian says, mine wasn't vague. So I'm guessing this is a follow-up to the conversation about vague prompts. And Cypherian says, I'm now working at an arts and crafts store. I'm annoyed for the students. It's hard. There's a lot of factors going on. And there's a lot of generational difference. For example, when I was at RISD, I was one of the few professors that was just all digital. A lot of people were still Xeroxing syllabi. I was like, no, none of this. Because you know something, if you don't do it by Xeroxing and you give it digitally, the students can't say to you, I lost it. And I say, nope, I send it to you. It's right there. And then they can't argue. So you'll notice that actually a lot of things are preemptive measures that I do to make sure students aren't giving me stuff, because it is very frustrating when that happens. Okay, let's see what else is going on in the chat. Okay, so Rob is asking, what do you think about hyperrealism? So here's the thing, that there's my opinion as a teacher, and then there's my personal opinion. I want everybody to understand that those are two different things, because there certainly are pieces of artwork in history and contemporary art that are not my cup of tea. Like my personal taste, I don't happen to like that thing, but I recognize its importance. I'll say, okay, well, in the context of art history and the time period and its relevance to what was happening, I feel this is a very important piece of artwork, even though it is not my cup of tea. So there's something like that. And so I think hyperrealism is sort of the same thing, that I understand a lot of people like it. I understand that it is something that a lot of people really enjoy looking at. And I know for a lot of artists, it is a very satisfying technique to learn. And I mean, I could never do it, honestly. Like, respect to people who can sit down and work on a hyper-realistic piece for hours and hours. Like, I just do not have the focus to be able to do something like that. It's not really my cup of tea. I tend to like work that is a little bit more expressive. I think in terms of figurative art, a lot of the work I like to see is quite distorted, actually. Like one of my favorite artists is Giacometti, and he majorly distorts. I mean, he like takes figures and like stretches them, but that's what I really like. And so that's my personal cup of tea, and that's what I like. But I think everything has a place. The only thing that does not have a place is plagiarizing another artist's work. That has no place anywhere. And we have JJ, who says, for school, I'm working on my first oil painting. I'm really struggling to mix colors that aren't brown. How do? That is exactly what everybody experiences, oil paint. Oil paint is so easy to get muddy. Like, you have to actively try to not be muddy because it just does that automatically. So the first thing I would say is, are you painting with a palette knife? And you can follow up in the comments, JJ. And the second thing is, are you cleaning your brushes thoroughly? Because actually I discovered as an art school student that because I was quite lazy about cleaning my brush, that was making my paintings really, really muddy. And so you have to clean your paintings, not your paintings, your brushes. You have to clean them really well. And the other thing too, is you have to make sure that you're really spacing the colors out well on your palette, if that's something you're worried about. I mean, everybody paints differently, but if the muddiness is bothering you, try not to let the colors overlap too much, because that's the more something gets mixed, the muddier it gets. And so sometimes another way that I preempt that is I will paint with colors that are brighter than I want them to be. And so when it inevitably gets muddier, it actually ends up being sort of the color that I want. So sometimes if I try to do the colors as they are, it ends up being muddier. So I preempt things by painting them too bright, knowing that they are going to get muddier. But that is absolutely the key. Yes, Lisa, that was me. I was the noob who didn't clean brushes thoroughly, and it really makes a difference. Yeah, Louise says Murphy's oil soap. My favorite is D&L hand cleaner. And also, if you don't have a brush cleaning tank, I like the Silicoil brush cleaning tank. We have a video on it, and it's this little metal coil that's inside, and it cleans your brushes really, really well. If you're just using, let's say, a glass jar, and you're putting solvent in there, that's really bad, because basically every time you put your brush into that jar of solvent, your brush is getting really icky. The Silicoil brush cleaning tank, the crud goes to the bottom and then the brush stays on top. So it separates the crud from the clean solvent. So I would definitely get one of those. It's hard to explain without showing it to you guys, but I would certainly do that, because once I got one of those, I was like, wow, this is a whole new world of clean brushes that I did not know about before. Megan says, I have my first exhibition on the 30th. Any advice on how to settle your nerves before showing your work? Well, congratulations, Megan. That is so incredibly exciting. And Megan, if you would like to follow up and tell me what type of show, is it a group show? Is it a solo show? And will you be going to the opening, that type of thing? I can certainly help. But the thing I can say is that whenever I've exhibited my work anywhere, group show or whatever, and I'm not talking about art fairs, that's a different thing altogether, an exhibition at a gallery or something like that, I don't think I've ever had somebody really be awful to me. People are pretty nice, because you know what? When you see them in person, people put on those filters. People don't have a filter on the internet. And that's, it's so easy to be like, you suck. But people don't usually do that in real life. That would be an exception for sure. And I would just say, Megan, just congratulate yourself. That's a huge milestone. So tell me in the chat, who here has exhibited your work before? And how did you calm your nerves? Because everybody has nerves for something like that. And who here's thinking about trying to show their work somewhere? Because it's not an experience that everybody has to have, but it is a really good one. I think it feels official, because sometimes when we make artwork, I know me, I make the work and then I finish it. I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I'll share it and stuff like that. But sometimes it feels a little anticlimactic. But when you make something and it goes into a show, it's like, wow, there's the finish line. It's so concrete. And when you see your work on the wall, I mean, there's nothing like it. So I'm very, very happy for you, Megan. And TM says, I'm an acrylic painter curious about oils, but hesitant to deal with solvents. Do you think it's better to try solvent-free oil painting, water mixable oils, or natural citrus solvents? I haven't used those solvents before. I think somebody else told me, and I could be wrong, lavender spike oil or something like that. I think either way, if you use those solvents, you probably need to have fairly good ventilation, because I think at least lavender spike oil, I think, does have a smell. So I generally don't recommend to people to paint with anything with an odor with the windows closed. I mean, if you're doing acrylic, that's fine. Like, there's no issue there. I can tell you that I wouldn't recommend water mixable oils if you really want to have an oil painting experience, because I've tried them. And honestly, if you think about them as replacement oils, they're just inherently disappointing. Like, they don't really feel like oils to me. I mean, they really feel like a third type of paint. Like, there's acrylic, there's oil, and then there's water-based oil. So I almost feel like they should give it a different name that doesn't have the word oil in it, because if you think about it as a comparison to oil, it just doesn't compare. Like, the pigments are not that strong, and it just felt like really wimpy oil paint to me. But it might work for you. Some people really like it. For me, I had so much experience painting with oil before that I just had a lot of trouble settling into that. But I would do some research about those solvents, because something can be not bad for you but still have an odor. For example, I've done image transfers with Citrusolve, and that is perfectly safe. But the issue with Citrusolve is that it has a very strong smell, and I could not work with it outdoors for too long of a period of time. Oh, actually, Glenn is following up. Lavender spike oil has a stronger smell than mineral spirits do. Yeah, that's what I heard. I wasn't sure if I was correct, but thank you for jumping in there, Glenn. So you do have to really research what the smells are, because actually, you know, it's weird. There was a plastiline oil-based clay brand that we used to use, because I took a figure modeling class when I was at RISD, and it had such a strong odor. Now, see, that plastiline is fine if it's just one person in a room, but in a classroom of 20 people using that plastiline on a hot summer day, I mean, I felt like I was getting headaches from it. And it was not dangerous, not toxic, but it had this fume that I was like, oh my God. I mean, not a literal fume, but it definitely stunk up the room to the point that it was uncomfortable for me. And we have some other suggestions for people talking about things like G says EcoSolve. Yeah, I need to do some research on that, because I really don't have a lot of experience. And to be honest, I haven't painted with oil for years because I just have never had a proper studio. I just have a room in my house, and I guess I could paint with oils in the summer if I could just open all the windows. But because I have kids, I just get a little stressed about it. So that's one of the reasons I just don't want that stuff around. And JJ, follow up from the last comment. I don't have a palette knife. I'll look into that. Been trying to clean my brush really thoroughly, but it's just so tedious. It is, but you have to do it because the muddiness is going to happen. The other thing about a palette knife is the palette knife makes it so you're not using your brush to mix, because if your brush is all gooped up, so if I take this brush and I've used it to like mix a color, that's actually really difficult, because when you mix a brush, if you use a brush to mix, like all this gook gets in there. So if I mix with a palette knife first, I do. Here's my palette knife. So let's say you take the palette knife and you mix first. My brush is super clean. It doesn't mix for me. So I do the palette knife first. I mix the colors as much as I want. And then I dip a nice clean brush into that color mixture. And now my brush only has the nice mixture of color. And so that's one of the reasons you need a palette knife. I also really like getting a gloss palette. You can make one yourself. And that also makes it easier. I find some of the other palettes, like the wood ones, I find those impossible to clean. And Bobcat says, my first showing on April 1st. Hope I'm not the fool. I doubt you are. Okay, so Megan's following up. It's a group show in a Toronto gallery with my classmates. It's open to the public. I'll be going to the opening. Okay, you're going to be fine, because in a group show, you don't have the spotlight on yourself, but you still get to have the gallery show, because actually solo shows are awful to get stressed about. First of all, it's all you. And second of all, whenever I had a solo show, I was always freaked out that nobody would come. I'm like, I'm not that popular. It's not like I'm in New York City and all these people are going to come in, because I'd have shows at these smaller venues because I wasn't hot stuff the way people in New York are. But you'll be fine. What's nice about those group shows is that you can just mingle and, I don't know, eat a lot of cheese and crackers, which is, you know, why else do people go to shows? It's for all the wine, cheese, and crackers, but you'll be just fine. And Mystical Ren says, I'd love to show my work, but I'm a bit introverted and am most nervous about the social aspect. You could, if you wanted to, Mystical Ren, try to get into a show, and let's say you get in, you can skip the opening. That's okay. It depends on why you're showing. Some people do it because they want to network. They want to meet other artists. Other people, you just do it for yourself. You don't have to network. Nobody says that that is a requirement, and that's fine. People show for different reasons. Some people want to build up their exhibition history. Other people want to just do it as a nice goal that they have. They just want to have the experience, and that's fine. So that is an option. And I've done that before. Like when I was much younger, I'd get into these group shows and I wouldn't go to the opening for the exact same reason, because it made me so nervous. But for me, because I was in academia, I had to get over that, because I did need to network and socialize at those places. And Art with Alexander, there's no place to show art here. Been to a few outdoor events, but rarely make enough money to pay for the spot. I have a good time, but it's basically just advertising for me. Well, that's actually, Alexander, pretty good to think about the art fair that way, because actually a lot of people tell me I want to start selling my work. And I usually recommend, if it's possible, I know not everybody can do it, do an art fair, not to sell necessarily, not to like make the big bucks, but an art fair is a really good place to research what are people responding to. Because when people buy your stuff online, you have no idea what the reaction is. But if somebody sees your work in an art fair and they pick up your painting of Hugh Jackman and you get to see the reaction, you get to see if they just like glance at it and move on. Or usually when you do an art fair, let's say you're selling five different items, you can see, oh, wow, this one was really, really popular. Maybe that's one I want to do more of. This is one that didn't have any engagement. And I definitely have gotten things from the fair. So people will take your postcard or whatever. And I actually got two commissions after doing an art fair. So an art fair is not just about making the money. A lot of it is sort of understanding how people interact with your work, because seeing that is priceless. You're never going to get that no matter how much you share online. And Scott says, trying to change from oil to acrylic is difficult. Well, I did that too. And I did not like acrylic for a long time, but I've learned a lot from our community. Different things you can add, matte medium, slow dry medium, all the different types of acrylic. I didn't even know there was fluid acrylic or open acrylic. Those are two things that Golden has. I'm sort of dying to try both, but there are many more options for acrylic. And so if you need help with that, I would recommend to you guys join the Discord, because the Discord is a place where you can ask for support like that. And what's your friend's name standing behind you? His name is Logan. Who wants to figure out why? All I can say is that, you guys, Hugh Jackman posted a video of him working out. I like lost it that morning. And he had this Wolverine expression. Oh my gosh. That was a great way to start my morning. Uma's asking, in a show, how do you make sure the guests are not only family and friends and more art collectors? That usually doesn't happen unless you're showing at a pretty high profile gallery that already has a client base where they know these collectors and they invite them. And collectors are pretty serious people. They're oftentimes not people who are buying things to make their bathroom pretty. They're buying it for different reasons. And so if you're showing at a high profile gallery, like Lauren showed at Half Gallery in New York City, and they were that type of gallery, they had a client base and it was shown to collectors and stuff like that. I never got to that point. I mean, I showed solo shows at Simmons College. I had one at the Danforth Museum. And those are not places that have collector lists. And the thing is, you guys, the art collectors, they're not easy to find for good reason. And they seem to just sort of come out of the woodwork. It's weird. Sometimes you never know. Like one of my former students, he had, and actually he's on a live stream. Owen Rival was on a live stream talking about his reference photos. And if you look up Art Prof reference photos, you'll find that interview with him. But he had a painting that was him sitting on a toilet. And they found a collector who collects toilet paintings. Like, how do you find the person that collects toilet paintings? And it was all through Instagram. So it's one of those things. It's like you never know who's paying attention. And that's why you do have to put yourself out there. So yeah, collectors don't really happen unless you're at a really high profile gallery. Leon says, currently getting my bachelor's in studio arts and art history. I plan on getting my master's, but in the meantime, what are some job opportunities I can should look out for with those degrees? I would say that you don't always have to have a job in your field. It's not always necessary because you know something, a lot of times I work with graduates and they would try really hard to get a job at an art gallery or a job at an art museum or something like that. But you know something, a lot of the jobs at those places are not good. Like I had this one student who had an internship at a museum and I remember she told me, I was like, oh great, that's fantastic. And she said that the internship was really disappointing. She said she felt like a museum assistant, like she was just sitting there like a guard in there. And, you know, she was really hoping the internship would teach her something about how museums work and all the various staff positions. And she said it was a total waste of time. I had another student who got an internship, again, unpaid, in New York City. And she said it was a total waste of time. She said the only thing she got out of it was a recommendation letter from the owner, but it wasn't even a good letter because it was like she was an intern. Like it wasn't a good letter of recommendation. And so sometimes you can learn more by going to places that are not those traditional art institutions. And so, for example, I had another student who was very interested in birds. Like she had all these bird paintings, which were fantastic. I thought they were some of her best work. And so I think for a lot of artists, our assumption is that, okay, well, if I want to show paintings of birds, I should go to a gallery. And I said to her, actually, don't do that. Go talk to the Audubon Society people. Those are people who love birds. Like they're going to be so into your work. And so I think just thinking outside of the traditional structure of art gallery, art museum is a really good thing to do. or even working for a publication or something, like learning how to do social media, that's a skill in itself. So there are a lot of jobs that are not in that field that might teach you more, actually. And Amara says, I have a list of artist fashion designers from the list on your website. Yes, if you guys go to our website and you go under resources, which is in the top of the menu bar, we do have pages that are lists of artists based on genre. For example, list of designers, a list of landscape artists. And that's a great place to find artists. Just Google the names and you'll find some good stuff. It's all stuff that we have decided would be helpful to know about. And how do I go about studying them? I'm a little lost when it comes to studying art and fashion history. I would recommend going to the museum sites. So if you type in museum fashion, you're going to get really good results because fashion's so big. And if you want to study history of fashion design, the best way to do that is through the museum collections. So just type museum women's fashion, or you could say women's fashion in, I don't know, Australia in the 1800s, whatever time period you want to do, but that is the best thing to do. So typically whenever I want to find images for building a slideshow or something like that, I always put the word either museum in front of the search in Google, or I will put art history. So like actually there, sometimes I need to find pictures of like a fish in art history. So I will type into Google art history fish and it works. It's fantastic. So try that. That's really helpful. Amara says, do I do a report in them with photos? Just confused. I meant to ask about it during the self-study live. Whatever works for you. I mean, some people like to take notes. Maybe you have a sketchbook. Maybe you have a Pinterest board that you save images that you really like. There's no correct way to do it. I think whatever you think is going to help you learn best. And Bobcat is asking, is it true that you can add baby powder to acrylic to give it more texture? I've never done that before. I'm not sure what the result is, but honestly, if you want texture, you're probably better off just mixing something into it. I know Lauren mixes old coffee grounds into her acrylics. I've seen people mix sand into their acrylics. I think that would probably get you better results. Baby powder is so fine that I feel like it would just dissolve into the acrylic. Iron Earth is asking, how is an art fair different from an arts and crafts fair? Or maybe I've only seen arts and crafts fair. Yeah, it gets very confusing because the terminology, like the word fair, is used a lot in different places, but they are different things. So for example, an arts and crafts fair would be like, I know Mia does a lot of them. For example, RISD has an alumni craft fair. And so that's something where Mia goes and she has a table and she sells her prints and stickers and things like that. And people can come and buy her stuff. And you'll see a lot of those around the holidays. They have like a holiday craft fair or something like that. So that's more art and craft fair. Now, art fair in terms of high profile galleries, that's like Art Basel. Lauren and I actually went to an art fair in New York and we do have a video on it. If you guys just type in Art Prof, Art Fair. It was the Future Fair. That's the one we went to. That is basically all these high-end galleries are in one place. Every gallery has like an area in some big space. And the art dealers are all there. They usually have some work to sell. But it's basically a place where you can see tons of high-profile galleries all in one place. Because unless you're in New York, it's not really possible to do that. So that is a very, very different thing. And I would love to someday go to one of those big fairs because I've never been to a really big one. The Future Fair was pretty small, but Art Basel's the big one. There's actually one in Hong Kong that's coming up. So a lot of them are very international and I would love to go see one someday. And well, 7A, why Skeleton is named Logan, like Logan Wolverine. And Uma's asking, would you show your work in a restaurant or through a corporate loan program? Oh, I'm so glad you brought that up. So there are lots of corporate art loan programs where a company that provides artwork for, let's say, a hotel lobby or a restaurant or something like that. So they basically, you loan your painting to this company, and then the painting, let's say, goes into this hotel or dentist office lobby or something like that, and then you get it back. I've never done one of those before. I think it might be good if you are trying to find different ways to show your work. I can't remember what the numbers are, though, if they sell, give you the option to sell. I'm not really sure, or if they pay you a fee. You guys would have to look into it, but that is an option. And showing my work in a restaurant, I think I would if it was very specific to what I do. Let's say I was a mushroom artist and I just drew mushrooms all the time. And they were all those fancy mushrooms that they have at those Michelin starred restaurants. I feel like I would do that. But I think for me, it is more about what is the end result I want to get from something like that. And the thing about a restaurant is if I want to sell my work, that maybe isn't the best place to sell because people are eating and they're not really thinking about buying the work. A cafe is a little different than a restaurant. Like, I've seen a lot of artwork in cafes. Like, usually the prices are displayed, so it's a little bit more clear. But again, it's like people walk into the cafe to get a cup of coffee. They're not there to buy art. Whereas if you go to, for example, a holiday fair, people will pay like $3 or entrance fee going knowing that they want to buy something. So that's one of the advantages of an art fair, is that it is people who are there to buy. A restaurant, that's not quite the same thing. And let's see. Alexander says baking soda for texture and acrylic. Maybe. I don't really know. Okay, looks like we have time for maybe one more question. Low End Nerd says, what do you think about putting comics in a sketchbook? I want to try and get into CalArts in the future. Make all my high school comics, but I'm not sure if that would be good for admissions. If you're talking about a finished comic, like one you're really going to spend time on, I wouldn't put it in your sketchbook because you're going to want to work on, well, I don't know what type of work you do, but let's say you're making your comic out of markers. You probably don't want that in a sketchbook because the paper's so thin. A lot of comic artists will use Bristol board. Bristol board works great. It's nice and thick, really good for comics. So I know CalArts has that sketchbook thing, but I think if you want the comic to really be finished, I would do it separately. But if you want to do like a really sketchy one that maybe you're just playing around with, I think that's okay as well. And oh, this is a good follow-up from Anna. So it depends. All of these situations that you guys are asking me about selling or corporate program and everything, Anna's saying it can get ruined and restaurants don't insure. So you don't necessarily know that. It depends on the restaurant. But see, these are the types of things that as an artist, you have to ask. So let's say you are thinking about showing your work at a restaurant. It is on you, unfortunately, to go to the people and say, well, are you going to insure the work? And if they say no, and that bothers you, then you shouldn't go. I mean, I had somebody call me, a local person, and they were like, oh, you want to be in this show? And I was like, okay, well, where's the contract? They're like, we don't have a contract. I'm like, goodbye. So you have to make sure that there are these safeguards in place, because yes, it's true. If you don't have those things in place, you can get sort of ripped off. So it sort of stinks. Yeah, like Anna's saying, you have to buy your insurance, it gets expensive. I mean, in a lot of cases, it's just not worth it for me to do something like that. So I would definitely ask those questions, because unfortunately, we can't depend on other people to do that for us. Remember, we do have spaces in these April workshops. This is where you get to work with me in real time. So as you're working on your pieces, I get to jump in there on voice and help you with your work. And these are really, really fun. It's not just the live session. You get written support and critique the week before and the week after. So it's actually more like a 2-week workshop, but we only have one live session. Live session is 3 hours, but it's a really great experience. Remember, everybody in our Discord gets one free session for Open Studios Club, which is a really fun casual voice chat where everybody works on their personal projects. In a selfish way, I am getting work done. It's keeping me accountable. And a lot of people like it for doing that because you set aside that time to work on your pieces. Join our Patreon group. This is a really excellent, supportive, kind, supportive group. Small group of artists. You get critiques from me. You also get to share your art in weekly voice sessions with staff. Art Prof has services. We have artist statement editing, portfolio critiques, personal art curriculums, and artist calls. Everybody, thank you so much for watching. Oh, and by the way, you should all subscribe because I need to get to 1 million. Actually, I don't want to get to 1 million. You know why? Because I told Dorian I would dance if we got 1 million subs, and I don't want to dance. So maybe we can get up higher, but you know, don't get too close to 1 million. I don't really want to do that. Okay. Thanks everybody. I'll see you next time. No Discord chat. We don't do Discord chats after the Friday hangout. So have a great rest of your night. Bye everybody.